You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everybody. We're covering the last events. It hardly seems possible, but the last events of the Democratic nominating process are this weekend, and by Tuesday, it should all be over. Full coverage of that. Also, we're talking about the National Spelling Bee later in the program, and leads us to our takeaway question. What are the words that tripped you up? Okay, maybe you were in a spelling bee, and like our producer, Noel King, you missed impugn, and it changed your life. Are there words that changed your life in other ways? You can get to us by 877-8-MY-TAKE and leave a spin box message that we'll play on the air, or you can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org. We're also covering the economy today. Krista Freeland, managing editor at the Financial Times, I have to say my favorite newspaper, joins us in the studio. Thanks for getting up. Thanks for coming in.
I have small kids, so getting up is not that much of a problem.
Right. Yeah,
but thank
up.
You
yes.
very
so
much.
So I get up so early, my kids are still asleep when I get up. But, you know, I wanted to talk to you about some issues that I think are gut-level economic issues that everybody can understand, and also maybe explore some really obscure stuff that I don't think ever get fully explained in a news program like this. But this has been an interesting economic week, right? I mean, we've got Bear Stearns vanishing from the face of the earth, plus interesting sort of ambiguities about economic statistics. Consumer confidence seems to be hitting lows, but there is growth in the economy. What do you expect politically about the economy, which doesn't look like it's going to go as south as people were predicting even as recently as a couple weeks ago?
I guess the big political question, as you've been talking about, remains the election. And I think for the purposes of the election, there is going to be sufficient economic softening, especially moving into the third quarter when the impact of the fiscal stimulus, which we're going to start to feel this month, next month, will start to abate, that the economy will, I think, be the number one election mm-hmm. issue.
But what's keeping these growth figures afloat? Is it something besides consumer spending? Are people actually using their stimulus checks to keep growth going, or do we not really know yet?
I think the true answer, and I talked to a lot of people yesterday asking them exactly this question so that I would have something to say to you, and the smarter the person I talked to, the more they were willing to say, look, the outlook is extremely clouded. It's extremely unclear. We really don't know. And we've seen that reflected in the actual behaviors of some of the smartest people in business. So, for example, GE, we were all astonished when GE didn't meet its first quarter estimates. And what was so surprising about that was that that showed us that this incredibly well-managed company just didn't have visibility even 1 and 2 weeks going forward.
But the interesting thing about GE is the way they make their balance sheets work often is at the end of the quarter they sell some businesses to produce cash, and they got caught in the liquidity crisis where they couldn't sell, and so all of a sudden they got sort of caught with their pants down a little bit.
That is exactly right. And what was not visible to them when we had the comments from Jeff Immelt just a few days before the Bear Stearns crisis really hit and froze up liquidity was he couldn't predict that.
He couldn't predict it, right. And options for even someone like Jeff Immelt of GE are narrowing in this economy. So choppy economic statistics, maybe up 1 month, down the next month. What do you think that's going to mean politically, even though the broad trend, you say, is softening? If there's good news, bad news month to month politically, what do you think that's going to mean?
Well, I think what it will mean is we're going to see candidates struggling to come up with easily intelligible ideas that show they are thinking about the economy, they understand people's pain. And what I think is really tricky is we are entering uncharted waters. You know, the economic picture is quite different from what we've experienced in the past 8 years. Inflation is an issue again. We haven't mm-hmm. talked about that for a long time. Very weak U.S. dollar, all of these issues coming together. And so I think you'll have some odd proposals. And the gasoline tax holiday
is
three-way
right.
Set of proposals, I think, is an example
which
of that.
Most economists thought was absurd.
In fact, probably all economists. Hillary Clinton couldn't cite
right,
a single
right.
one. But she doesn't really have much truck with economists.
Let's shift gears. I want to ask you about something that couldn't be more obscure but was on the front page of the FT and the Wall Street Journal yesterday, I believe, and that was the LIBOR rate is maybe not a true rate. Let's just say all I know about the LIBOR rate is in this sentence here, and that is it is the rate that bank, the average rate that banks charge each other to lend to each other. Why is it important? Why should we care? Why would it get on the front page?
It's been important for a long time, and it's an indicator that people have looked at for a long time because it tells us something about the liquidity in the markets. And
credit is available. Money is flowing.
Right. And at what rate money is flowing. So it's an important indicator, but it has traditionally been quite a boring one. We haven't really had to devote a lot of energy and time to thinking about the composition of LIBOR.
Why would banks, as was reported in the stories, lie or exaggerate about their LIBOR rate? What's scandalous about that?
Well, the interesting thing that has happened is people are starting to be concerned that the reported LIBOR rate may not be a true reflection of the price at which money is available between banks.
And if it's not a true rate, then maybe the liquidity in the market is not actually real, and we end up with more situations like Bear Stearns.
And maybe all our calculations are off, crucially. So what do people think could be the problems with LIBOR? I think there are two dominant explanations. The first one is banking ultimately comes down to confidence and to being a confidence game. And if you are running a bank and you are reporting to others the rate at which you are lending or able to borrow, you might not be willing to talk about just how bad things are. So that's one concern, and there's no actual evidence of this.
You got to reflect confidence, but you got to hold some cards back as well.
So one concern is that banks might not be totally open when they report their own information and out of which LIBOR is calculated. The second thing is, which I think is also important to bear in mind, is the way LIBOR is calculated, the way we're accustomed to thinking about it, is in a liquid market. And for a long
When things freeze up, LIBOR is harder to calculate. We'll talk about that in a moment. Hold that thought. Is there a word that's ever tripped you up quickly?
LIBOR? How's
LIBOR,
that?
Yeah, right. It trips up international bankers. Krista Freeland is managing editor of the Financial Times. She's my sort of guest friend this hour. But now we're going to go to Femi Okeh with some more headlines. Femi?
Hello there, John. It's coming up to just 29 minutes past the hour.